Welcome to Future Creators. I'm Robert Brothing.
And I'm Francis McInerney.
Future Creators, that's future-creators.com, is a self-directed, self-paced program for C-level executives who want to scale their companies profitably in our zettabyte era. Francis is managing director of Future Creators, and today we're going to talk about future creator, Apple. Welcome, Francis.
Hey, welcome, Robert, too. Thank you for having me. Apple is such an interesting story because everybody thinks that Apple must be an awfully complicated company, some secret formula, if you like, some kind of mystical way or mysterious way of doing what it does and coming up with the kinds of revenues and profits that it does. In fact, as always with companies this successful, the business model is so simple, it's scary. Simple and uncomplicated, this entire company is built on only two things: the three cloud membrane structure that we use, and a seriously super fast ecosystem. Put the two together, Apple scales, others don't. And this system has even allowed Apple to do something that a lot of the big conglomerates of the past have been unable to do successfully, and we're seeing GE fall apart on the same point today, and that is operate in multiple unrelated markets. Apple, big in consumer electronics, of course, now automotive, healthcare, even banking. And doing this and scaling fast, it has a devastating effect on its markets because it kills the competition. You know, Apple's business model could disappear tomorrow, but the companies it has eliminated will never, ever come back. And everything about their business models and their ecosystem velocities will never return either. And this, for CEOs, is a gigantic lesson. It's simple, it's uncomplicated, and your firm should operate the same way. And if you do, you too can kill the competition and determine outcomes. But you know, a lot of CEOs out there just don't get this. And we are determined to teach them, make sure that they give the kind of return to their shareholders that their shareholders deserve. Be future creators, folks, not future losers.
What they get right is that these cloud membranes, all three of them interact, that there's no real fixed interaction formula. Let's dive deeper into that, how Apple got this and nobody else really has.
Well, you know, that is the famous quote from the Walt Mossberg interview. When Steve Jobs said exactly that, he said, anyone could have done this, but nobody did. And it's so simple. It's so simple. Future creators, what we did is to divide the cloud into three membranes. And we call them membranes for the simple reason that they're strong, but what's on them is not fixed. It's not rigid. And I want to give you a simple idea. Just think of your smartphone and look at the apps. And we have an app membrane. That's one of the cloud membranes. That membrane could cover anything. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's a game or a medical procedure or Netflix. You can put any of that in any order, any way you want, on the app membrane, as it were. And the membrane is completely indifferent as to the number and type of app on it. And we have a whole seminar on what we call the app equivalency rule that describes how all of that works at future-creators.com. Customers can access that and understand how to leverage the app membrane. And then we have also the app enablement membrane, and it has similar rules because it doesn't matter what enables an app, whether it's a car, I often say even a coal mine, smartphones, of course, and pretty soon your light bulbs, even your windows. I'm working on a project right now to turn your windows into app enablement devices, and that'll be a real stunner when it hits the market. So you look at this and you say, this is almost like a fabric, because it's not rigid, it's not structured, it's not defined. The app enablement membrane, anything that enables an app is fine on that membrane. And then we have the app delivery membrane, anything that connects the other two, it doesn't matter what it is, from Bluetooth to fiber, anything, 5G, whatever connects the other two. And these membranes interact. This is something that Steve Jobs figured out. you can get your apps and your app enablement devices and your networks to interact. And when they do, you can identify the profitable interactions. And if you identify those, especially if you identify them first, you make the most money. And he also figured out, as we did, that there is no fixed formula for this interaction. You know, for instance, you can have different app purchasing formulas, in-app, you know, app store, whatever. So there are all kinds of ways of looking at this, and nothing is fixed, but the kind of money that can be made is huge. And this alters fundamentally industrial structure, because if you, like so many Japanese companies, think you're in the business of making things, okay, so you make cameras, TVs. But what Apple did is said, no, those things sit on the app enablement membrane, and there are two other dimensions here that function and that are monetizable and that are part of your product set. And if you don't understand those, you don't understand the interaction envelope and how big it is today, and how cloud-centric it is, and how the marginal cost computing aspect of the cloud drives the revenue opportunity, you're never going to figure out how to manage your brand. And sure enough, all those great names, all of the Panasonics, Toshibas, and so on, that dominated consumer electronics, Sharp, for decades, have vanished. They're no longer brand entities of any matter whatever. So what happened here was that Jobs figured this out. He understood it. He was the first person ever to understand it. I think we are the first people ever to interpret it so the public can understand it. And we started interpreting this and laying it out for our clients about 10 years or so ago. So quite a long time ago. And we've been able to track the interactions ever since, and we've been able to make very precise predictions as to what will happen with different companies. We have lots of case studies on future-creators.com, and our clients can view them. CEOs can go in there and learn very quickly what to do and what not to do. And so that is the interaction envelope of the cloud membranes.
Let's go a little deeper into this whole concept of profitable interactions. How can companies neglect to notice what's profitable and what isn't?
This is a stunner. And it's the biggest problem. I think that if you don't have the eyes, if you like, that Future Creators provides you, if you don't have the ability to understand the three cloud membranes and how they interact, you can't identify the markets. And Apple did something extraordinarily simple with its three cloud membrane interaction concept. You know, if you go back to 2001 to 2003, that's the period I call the Apple Storm, when all of the core pieces of the modern Apple came into the market. Apple was really in the MPEG-4 player business, PCs, laptops, markets in the tens of billions. But by understanding the cloud interaction envelope and its dynamics, they were soon in markets like tablets and phones that are in the hundreds of billions. And the same system enabled them to start attacking markets like auto and healthcare and banking that are in the trillions. Now, if you don't have Future Creator system to understand this, you cannot literally cannot see these opportunities, nor can you see how they sync up. And I think that's what's happened to CEOs. They just haven't seen this stuff. And there were people, classic example, in the cell phone business, who thought they were in the phone business. That's what happened to Nokia. They thought they were selling phones. No, they were not. They were selling cloud membrane interaction devices. There were people in the computer business who thought they were selling computers. Well, they weren't. And now Apple is in a position where it can, if it wishes, and I predicted Apple would take a shot at Disney to do this back in 2014, layer content on the three cloud membrane interaction envelope, as much content as it wants. And sure enough, we've seen in the last few months, Apple's talking about launching its own movies and so on. So, and it doesn't have to be movies either. It could be any kind of content. If you were a bank, the thing that should terrify you more than anything is that Apple just puts a bank on its structure. It's a bank. Well, it's a bank with how many billion customers already? And those customers are already linked across multiple platforms, from PCs through to healthcare devices on Apple's simple three-membrane model. You've got to be terrified of that. If you're in the healthcare business, the last thing you want is Apple to launch medical devices that are just app enablement devices stuck on an iCloud. Yeah, that's death for you. And so, wonderful for the hospitals. Talk about cost reduction. But these are the things that Apple can do. Very simple, very straightforwardly. But again, if you don't have the Future Creators system in front of you, you can't see any of this. And there's no one who can show it to you either. I mean, your investment bankers wouldn't know. They have no idea about any of this. Wouldn't know where to begin. Big consulting houses, not the slightest idea. They have no expertise in this, whatever. So if you're not using Future Creators, you're lost. It's as simple as that. We're the only ones who do this, and there ain't no one else. So CEOs, you better get in on this, because if you don't, there's a lot of money that's walking away from you. In fact, I'd say running away right now.
Speaking of money walking away, Apple's been walking away with a lot more money, and a lot of it has to do with them scaling big time in the areas of research and development. Let's talk about that effect of their increased research and development spend over the last decade.
Well, you know, it starts, in my view, with Apple's ecosystem velocity. And this is where Tim Cook is just one of the great geniuses of all time. If you look at Apple's data from 1996 to 1998, the first thing that jumps out at you is a sudden drop in two key data points. One is days of sales in inventory, and the other is days of sales in receivables. Now, if you go back to how big Apple was at the time, I don't know, $7, $8 billion a year in sales, and how big it is today, what you see underlying everything Apple does is a scale engine. And this scale engine is what kicks in for the R&D numbers. With the Apple ecosystem velocity revolution back 20 years ago, 96 to 98, 99, there was a complete restructuring or rethinking of all Apple operations. So for example, days of sales in inventory in 99 hit, I think, 2 days and have never been above 6 in the 20 years, more or less, since that time. So the company has risen in sales by an extraordinary amount over those years, but it's kept its days of sales in inventory flat at very, very low numbers, which means its supply chain is extraordinarily efficient. And indeed, today Apple is known for prepaying for strategic parts a year, year and a half in advance by using this strength. So we then were followed with what I call the Apple storm between 2001 and 2003, when Apple launched all the core elements of its current architecture. Its new operating systems, the iPod, which became, of course, the iPhone, is how it morphed. It's all of its Wi-Fi connections and so on. Everything that we now see as Apple and the important parts of Apple were launched during that short period. So Apple has now had, 15, 16 years of experience with a super fast ecosystem and the core product architecture that's fit onto the three membrane interaction envelope in place and experience and knows how to manage that for years and years and years. Meanwhile, its days of sales and receivables have continued to drop, and they're now favorable, so that if you look at Apple's total days of sales and inventory and receivables, they're around 30. Have a look at your company and see if you do that. I know what the answer is. Then the most interesting thing is that this enabled almost immediately a simply stupefying takeoff of operating income over R&D expense. In 1996 and 97, Apple could not cover its R&D expense. It couldn't. Today, it has one of the most amazing returns. R&D is one number. Look at the operating earnings. Oh, my Lord. They are multiples and multiples and multiples of the R&D expense. So this is a fabulously efficient machine. You've just, its efficiency is almost unprecedented. And this is what is causing the competition monster problems, because the competitors just don't have anything like this. And they don't have the money to show for it. Apple's got the cash in the bank to do almost anything it wants.
One of the key lessons, and this will be my final question for today, is that the ecosystem velocity, of course, drives all operations. And one thing Apple has done well is really to get rid of anything that doesn't accelerate the ecosystem and to outsource it. How can companies learn from Apple in this area?
Anything that does not turn customer information into cash, and this is future creator lesson number one, anything that does not demonstrably turn customer information into cash fast, get rid of. It is irrelevant to your operations. Outsource it immediately. Have nothing to do with it. Maybe even drop it entirely. But you have to, as a CEO, focus on customer information, turning it into cash, get the ecosystem velocity that gets you there, get the information velocity that gets you there, understand these principles. Future creators will get you to that point. And we're the only people who know how to do this. No one else does, because as Steve Jobs says, anyone could have done this, but they didn't.
Don't forget to visit us again at future-creators.com, where you can find out more about how to turn customer information into cash. And make sure that you determine outcomes and don't get run over by them. Thanks, Francis.
Hey, thanks, Robert. See you again soon.